Hello, Sinsanity! Welcome to episode 4 of our podcast. Today, Kevin Berman graces us with his presence again. We're going to do a little bit of a sports rundown. We're going to talk about the MLB, the NFL, the NBA, the WNBA. What about the Reds? What about their offensive woes? Yet the starting pitching has been so good. Is Las Vegas the next major sports market in addition to LA and New York City? And then we'll talk about the thing that everyone's probably tiptoeing around. A PGA Tour pro ended up in jail. That's not good. It is not good, people. But no one knows the truth yet, so we don't know what really happened. So how about that, Redlegs fans? What do you say we get this thing started? I just sold out to the perfect condition. Coming alive. Whoa.
Nice headset.
Isn't that a cute color?
Either your head is really, really tall, or those headphones are really, really big. It looks like it's you're squeezing your head in a vice.
Like the little thing they put on the babies that skulls are misshaped when they're born.
The helmet? I was wearing a helmet.
Yeah.
Child, please. All right, I'll start. I got a serious problem with Caitlin Clark.
you got a problem with her.
You know, I will say this. At the end of the day, she capitalized on her college career. She was the number one draft choice, leveraged that into a small fortune, and more power to her. It's just like with AOC. I don't agree with her politics. But I applaud her for the way she got elected. She mastered social media, used it to her advantage, and she's in the House of Representatives. Good for her.
So I want to go back to something that you said. Her college career. What exactly did she accomplish in her college career?
You know, if you're going to go the championship route, I mean, factually, you're correct, but I believe they made it to the finals out of Iowa, which I'm not even sure had a team 5 years ago. So read into that what you want.
Let's compare it to the same conference. So apples to apples in the Big Ten. But let's flip the equation and let's talk about another human being that I can't stomach, and Zach Edey, right? Zach Edey for Purdue specifically made it to the championship game this past year, the same year that Caitlin Clark did. Zach Edey, however, was a male back-to-back national player of the year. Zach Edey not only is not getting the lucrative deals in college and into his pro career or ending pro career. We have yet to see what's going to end up happening with him. And arguably, his performance is probably in line with that I would see Caitlin Clark performing at, right? Probably on a team that's not a contender and is putting up lackluster numbers at the end of the day. It seems to me that there's powers to be that are trying to prop up the WNBA. And Caitlin Clark was like right place, right time.
The NBA. How long has the NBA been around?
A lot longer.
A lot longer time to build their product, build their brand. And as a result, they are where they are. The WNBA is, as you like to say, I think it's crawl, walk, run. They might be walking right now. They're beyond the crawl stage, but they're not running. The NBA is running.
They're running from Russia.
That's, I think the underpinning factor here is the talent, right? How can you have a two-time National Player of the Year player coming in and being ineffective in her role? I don't understand it.
I think you're comparing apples to oranges, but I mean you're comparing a men's sport to a woman's sport. Not talking down on women. Bodies are just built differently. It's apples to oranges when you start talking about talent level, NBA versus WNBA, et cetera.
I think it's that, and I think it's the maturity of the brand. The WNBA needs to do anything they can to promote the brand and get more eyeballs.
And to clarify what I said, like, look, men and women, they're built differently. There are things women can do physically that men can't do, and vice versa. So that's why I say it's apples to oranges. I mean, if any one of us had to give birth to a child, I'm sure we'd scream like a little girl compared to our wives.
Right.
I mean, it's just their bodies are designed differently.
If you go back to where the NBA was and their journey at the time the WNBA is right now, they didn't have all those people. And in fact, if I am to believe the pundits, it was the Larry Birds and Magic Johnsons of the world that put the NBA on the map. Well, they had been around for 20 or 30 years before those guys put them on the map. WNBA hadn't been around that long.
I go to Aviators games, Aces games, Las Vegas Aces games here in Vegas. Aha Wilson, I would argue, is 10 times the player that Caitlin Clark is, mostly because she's a 6'6 or 6'5 female who just, she's like Shaquille O'Neal out there, right? Like, she dominates at the end of the day. Caitlin Clark is, I don't know, I guess this might be an unpopular opinion. She comes to me, she comes off to me as more of like a side act in sports.
Okay, well, first off, she's only had 5 games. She's got to grow into her career. But speaking of growing into careers, growing into a professional sport, let's take a look at the Reds and talk about that real quick. You got all these young guys. You got a lot of struggles going on with the Reds offensively. Their starting pitching's good. Their fielding. What's your guys' thoughts on what's going on with the Reds right now? I mean, there's a lot of injuries, but you can't plan for the injury bug. But I think there are some other things that can be done to help try to fix some of this. But their offense is abysmal right now.
Offense is the end-all be-all of their problems currently.
What's your take, Berman?
Let's just start with this. When your batting average leader is hitting .254 and has a hole in his swing like a Swiss cheese, like a piece of Swiss cheese, like there's nothing more to say, right? Like, there's just nobody on that team that can hit the ball for an extended period of time, right? Like, who's your leader right now? Is it Ellie De La Cruz is your batting leader right now?
Nope, Tyler Stevenson. And he is – it's .263. Last game against the Dodgers, it was up to .273. Obviously, he didn't do well versus the Padres. He was 1-for-8, but he also sat out a game. But he is also, like, top 5 or 6 in the league as far as exit velocity is concerned. So he's hitting the ball hard. But I don't disagree with you in regards to Ellie having a hole in his swing. It looked like he was starting to fix it. And I think now that the team is on such a losing streak, I think a lot of these guys are trying to do more than they need to try to do. Instead of staying within themselves, they just try to put the ball in play and get hits. Therefore, it turns into quicksand and their batting averages continue to go down.
Yeah, but even compared to the rest of the stats, though, like, his on-base percentage, his slugging percentage, and his OPS are all less than Ellie De La Cruz. But obviously that's for a variety of factors.
Well, as a team, they're like bottom 10 in the league in almost every major statistical category in regards to hitting.
So they're 30th in batting average, 28 BP, and 28 in OPS. And the bottom line is this. Until the reinforcements come in the form of McClain and Friedel and Marte and get CES back, what they need to have happen is A, Steer to play like we know Steer can play based on his team MVP season of last year. Stevenson to get back to his form of 2 years ago. And when they got two strikes on him, they need to protect the plate instead of watching the pitch.
And you got to get runs across when you got bases loaded and one out. I've seen that situation too many times in the past week, and they get two outs and don't get a run across. That's unacceptable.
Watch yesterday, they struck out with no outs and bases loaded. At least put the ball in play.
I mean, the question actually, and without our, you know, actual player pals on the line here. Are they the biggest disappointment in baseball this season?
I'd say there's an argument to be made for that, but I also think they played at a little bit higher level last year than they probably should have, which, hey, that's a great thing, right? Put fans in seats for the Reds. You got all these young guys coming up. But, yeah, it's a pretty big disappointment. But, again, I think the injury bug has a lot to do with that because you're talking like four or five guys in the starting lineup. And some of those guys were your best hitters, especially for batting average. That hurts. You can't exactly fix that unless you're going to go out and spend money and make trades and trade away a bunch of young prospect capital.
I mean, coming into the season, many outlets were projecting them to be at least in the NL wildcard race, right?
Oh, yeah.
Admittedly, they've played some stiff competition. I mean, the Rockies and the White Sox, like, they're horrendously bad. Like, who expected to see either of those guys competitive, right? The Mets might suggest they're in the running, right, as it sits right now. But, you know, the reality is a division title just always seems to be out of reach. Like, that's the part that I just – like, even going back to where I let in, like, the NL wildcard, like, is that the ceiling for this team year over year, is just to aspire to get to the NL wildcard? Like, why are they never in the conversation for NL champion?
Well, I think part of it is Nick Kroll's plan and all the talent he's built in the farm system coming to fruition, which that will take 2 to 3 years once those guys even are already in the big leagues, to me. If you look at the Orioles, for example, I think they were a little bit quicker developing that talent once they hit the bigs. I think the Reds could be similar to the Orioles. I'm not going to say as good. I'm going to say similar to the Orioles. They're a year or two behind the Orioles, and once they get there, I think you're talking about being expected to win the division, not just in the wild card race.
I think the interesting part is they flipped the script. Everybody figured the hitting would be there, and it was a matter of if the starting pitching could do better than last year. As it turns out, the starting pitching is their strength. Because of injuries and other reasons, the offense just isn't there.
Speaking of starting pitching, Berman, did you watch the game or the highlights, the game that Graham last pitched against the Padres in L.A.? Or not the Padres, the Dodgers, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I did.
Have you ever seen anybody weaponize the foul ball like that before? I mean, his first two innings was like 20 pitches, 24 pitches, and 21 pitches.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as that second inning started, I actually turned to the person I was sitting with at the time and was like, no way he's going deep in this game. And, like, he was at 70 pitches almost and by the end of the third, to your point, right? I think he might have been in the 70s. But, like, I don't know. Like, that roster is insane, though. Like, you talk about, like, projected NL champion. Like, the Dodgers, the way that roster is constructed, I mean, they just – they're all – every single one of them are contact hitters. So, I mean, yeah, like, it was crazy, but that team just puts the bat on the ball, whether they put it in play or not.
Well, I will say this. At least the Reds starters, I know Graham did for sure. They did pretty well at containing Ohtani, which is a pretty big deal for a four-game set.
Yeah, I think everyone probably knows you got to pitch away from the guy, right? Like, anything up and in or down and in is gone.
Oh, they pitched him a ton up and in, right under the elbows. That's where they were getting him, actually.
Yeah, I for some reason thought I was seeing outside of the plate, but, you know, for Ohtani, it actually that's a good shift in gear, just to kind of digress a little bit from the Reds. But, you know, I was kind of reading some of the comparisons between Ohtani and Babe Ruth, and, you know, it's actually incredible because I had thought, you know, for some reason that Babe Ruth pitched and hit in the same season every season, but that's not the case, right? He only pitched and hit for the first few years of his career, and then he became almost predominantly a hitter. I did not know that.
I didn't know that either.
It's true.
And Ohtani is in the same boat. And while he's coming off of his injury and his surgery, I think it's going to be super interesting to see how many seasons they ride him as both pitcher and hitter sensation, because he's already pitched and hit more years than Babe Ruth did in his career to date.
That's crazy.
Isn't that wild?
And as Graham said on the last episode, hitting's a different game nowadays, man. Those guys are throwing smoke. I mean, and you talk about pitching guys up and in. Look at all the guys that have hand injuries on the Reds. TJ Antone was on the broadcast last night, and he was talking about that. And he said, look, with these guys throwing 9,800 miles an hour, your reaction time to back out because it's close isn't as long as it used to be, which is why you're seeing not just the Reds, but a lot of guys getting hit in the hands on the bat, and you're seeing these hand injuries popping up more and more.
I mean, I also would say that the bats are probably constructed of different materials nowadays too. Harder wood versus softer wood.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, we're talking about baseball, NL Central. Are the Cubs for real?
I mean, my opinion on the NL Central as it sits right now, personally, is are the Cubs for real? It might not be the right question, right? Are the rest of the teams in the division that bad?
Okay, so then who wins the NL Central?
I mean, as it sits, it's pretty tight between the Brewers and the Cubs. I mean, I think it's going to come down to one of the two. Back to the Reds. I mean, the Reds are getting Marte back mid-summer, right? So the Reds might be able to make a little bit of a late-year push here. Cardinals don't have the rotation, starting or closing, to do damage, in my opinion. Pirates, they've got the bats, but not the pitching, except for you-know-who. Who is an incredibly phenomenal pitcher, but one pitcher in your rotation is not going to get you into the playoffs.
No, but that is what is working right now for the Cubs. If you look at their statistics offensively, they don't scare you.
They're about like the Reds.
They have two pitchers that are in the top five in ERA in the major leagues and have yet to lose a game. And if they can continue that level of performance, obviously they're not going to go undefeated for the season. But if they can continue that level of performance, I mean, that's going to keep them competitive for the rest of the season.
Whoever the scheduler for the Reds is needs to get his neck wrung, right? I mean, this NL West month has literally put them into a ridiculous hole.
I mean, but it'll be paid back when they're starting to play a lot of the NL Central teams in a big bunching. That's their shot to make that push to dig out of that or climb out of that hole that they've dug.
Speaking of scheduling, can someone explain to me how the NFL made the release of their schedule such an event?
I think you already hit the nail on the head with the WNBA, right? Like, it's all about getting eyeballs on it. And, you know, I have a theory on the NFL more than other leagues beyond football, that they are the most tightly wound with Vegas and sports betting. It's the lowest amount of games per year, and I think all they're trying to do is become the hype engine to drive sports betting.
Well, let's look at that as a microcosm in the sense of fantasy sports. Fantasy football is way more popular than any other kind of fantasy sport.
Well, and a challenge for the NBA and more so for the WNBA is if you don't live in a major city in the U.S., probably not many people watching the NBA. And it goes to, I was listening to Shaq's podcast today with Draymond Green, and he was asking him, okay, this was earlier in the playoffs, you know, the Thunder, the Timberwolves, the Pacers, the Knicks. And Draymond's like, look, the Thunder, nobody cares if they ever win a championship. It doesn't matter. Minnesota is Minnesota. Nobody cares if they win. They've got the Ant-Man. But other than that, nobody cares if they win a championship. And he said, same with the Pacers. Nobody cares outside of Indianapolis whether they win a championship. He said, the Knicks, on the other hand, they've got a very large market. And people rally around New York teams, and they get a lot of eyeballs. He said, that's the one. He said, those other three, nobody cares if they ever win a championship again.
the reality is, I mean, if we're drilling in on that, the Thunder and the funny thing is the Thunder and the Timberwolves are probably the two most equipped teams to make long-term extended runs at the championship, right? I mean, you kind of look at the Denver Nuggets as like the perennial, right? But now, you know, you've got two young teams that are just loaded with talent. I mean, the Indiana Pacers can get thrown into that too. Like, who cares if Indy wins the championship? Who cares, right? The NBA wants Boston. The NBA, which, by the way, Boston will probably win it this year, but the NBA wants Boston. The NBA wants New York. The NBA wants L.A. The NBA maybe wants Chicago, maybe.
I would agree with you. And as long as L.A. has LeBron, they're not going to win one, which makes it even more fun.
Well, now that we've already brought up, and I know we want to talk about football some more, but now that we've already brought up Caitlin Clark, let's talk about Caitlin Clark's clone on the men's side in Bronny James.
Oh, boy. I did see something came out where LeBron said he's not going to leave L.A. just to go play with his son. Whether that remains true or not, who knows, after the Miami shenanigans when he went to the Heat and made the whole coming out party for that and all that crap that went with it.
I mean, reportedly this last week, LeBron and Bronny were both offered $900 million between the two of them to come to Saudi Arabia for 1 year, next year, and play.
And would you do that if you were LeBron and Bronny?
I mean,
he's already got $1 billion. LeBron does. Bronny's going to inherit it.
Yeah, but $2 billion's more than one.
I personally believe that LeBron thinks his kid is good enough to play in the NBA. I think they would never do that in a million years because LeBron is going to do LeBron is LeVar Ball 2.0, but playing.
He wants a legacy.
He does, right? Like, to be quite honest with you, LeVar Ball wasn't that far off the mark. He's got two of his three kids who actually are decent. Not just decent, but they're perennial starters, if not all-star caliber. In the younger one, it was the middle one, LaMelo, not LaMelo was the middle one's name.
I don't know. I feel like we're talking about the Kardashians now. Can't keep them straight.
Well, he got clipped for stealing sunglasses while he's playing at UCLA. I think the NBA just kind of like he was just kind of like on the outside looking at it from the start. But I guess the point being is like, LeBron, I feel, is back to the point. LeBron is going to do everything possible to prove to the world that he has a kid that's going to continue playing in the NBA.
And I think he will be on a team in the NBA at some point in time, but I don't think he'll ever be a player in the NBA.
Can you be on a team that your father owns in the NBA?
Why not?
That's a good question.
Why not?
You can, but some of the other players might take exception to that. So I don't know that that's a good recipe or a good formula. I'll say that.
Well, you can certainly be on a team your dad coaches because you have Doc and Austin Rivers, right? To your point, John, I feel like LeBron's going to end up being part of an ownership group, and that's the squad that Bronny's going to get attached to if he doesn't just come straight out of the chute to the Lakers. I mean, let's be clear. Bronny James, back to my original point, and Caitlin Clark are the same individual as far as I'm concerned.
So as we're talking about young talent, how do you feel as a former Chicago Bears fan about Caleb Williams?
I mean, they're pulling the same bullshit that they pulled with Fields around all their social media and all of the messaging coming in and out of the media. I mean, he's Justin Fields 2.0 up to this point that we are currently in. I think the one X factor that exists for the Bears this season is their wide receiver core is significantly better day one for Caleb than it was for Justin.
Absolutely. And that goes for experience as well as youth.
I also think that you have those mobile quarterbacks. Like, look at Deshaun Watson. I think Caleb Williams is more along the lines of a Deshaun Watson where he can be mobile, but he can also rely on his arm quite a bit more than a Justin Fields as far as accuracy, football IQ, et cetera, is concerned. He's not just going to panic and hit the panic button and say, okay, I'm just going to run it now.
About C.J. Stroud? Similar.
Yeah, same concept. So whatever the Texans are doing, they figured it out with that style of quarterback and how to maximize their passing ability instead of letting them just try to run all over the field like Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, but I find it funny how we're sitting here talking about offense when the Bears in the entire history of their franchise have been known as a defensive team, right? Now, what's interesting is that, you know, Eric Washington, I listened to a soundbite of his the other day, so he's their D coordinator. He firmly believes that. I mean, the look on his face, like I think he seriously believes the Bears at this point have reloaded and have the best. He called them the best back seven in the NFL.
Over or under 8.5 wins for the Bears this year?
I mean, they're projected to go 10-7, so I'm going with the over. I think similar to our conversation in baseball, I think that the Bears NFC North division is definitely manageable for them this year.
Cousins is gone. Rodgers is gone.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
The Vikings are the biggest existential threat, but again, to your point, Cousins is gone. So, you know, yet to be seen how they perform offensively. I mean, listen, there's no doubt that the Bears' secondary strength is ridiculous, right? Jalen Johnson is an absolute animal, right? You got Tyler Gordon and I never know how to pronounce his first name. Jaquan, it's Jaquan, right? Brisker's first name, Jaquan.
That's what I've heard.
Those dudes can play, right? But my biggest issue with the Bears this year, especially related to defense, is they didn't address the defensive line at all in the offseason.
So who's their running back?
We got Khalil Herbert, Swift.
Swift. Okay. So given that, I can't believe I'm about to say this, the NFC North, the only proven commodity at quarterback is Jared Goff of the Lions, right? Okay, so do you think that winning the NFC North could potentially come down to which team has the best run game? I know it's a passing league, but that could be the X factor as far as offensive output is concerned.
Well, as I just mentioned, everyone and their mom's going to run all over the Bears. Their defensive line is atrocious.
Just like the Packers have been for the last decade?
Yeah, right? Except for the difference in the Packers is they just – they're offensive built, right?
Well, they were.
I mean, this year their offense this past season their offense was fairly impressive.
We'll see if Jordan Love turns another corner or not. That's what it's going to take for them to win the division, if you ask me.
I'm not afraid of Jordan Love relative to the Bears' back seven.
Oh, I don't disagree, but my point is for the Packers to pull off a division win at the end of the season, I think Jordan Love has to turn another corner and keep improving.
I think it's less about Jordan Love and more about a wide receiver core that's some above-average wide receivers, one of them stepping out and asserting himself as a true wide receiver one. That doesn't happen. I mean, with a defensive backfield like the Bears, it's lights out.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you don't draft wide receivers until round three every year. They did some in round two, but
I mean, let's be honest. The Vikings aren't really contenders this year. I think the Vikings are going to finish well below 500.
No quarterback, no running back. All they got is Justin Jefferson on offense and TJ Hockenson.
I think that it's just going to come down to if Love can start how he finished. But the NFC North is probably going to be the tightest division in football. Sans the Vikings.
Kind of like the NL Central in baseball.
I don't know about that this year.
All right. So speaking of sports, this one's right up your alley, Mr. Vegas. Vegas sports. They're getting a baseball team. What about the Raiders? The NBA. Is this going to be the next major sports market in addition to LA and New York?
Well, there are currently two projects active here in Las Vegas that both include a 20-plus thousand-seat stadium, which is the minimum threshold for the NBA, is a 20,000-seat stadium. What's interesting to note is that both the football stadium and the current hockey stadium, so the Golden Knights, are MGM related. They're both built on MGM property, and they are betting partners with MGM. It's very important to understand the gaming operator relationships with the leagues here in town in order to understand the prospect of a team, because the team is basically dependent on what the physical location of where they're going to play is going to be, right? Caesars is the sports betting partner for the NBA. You've got two stadiums in the books right now, and I think it's really bizarre that we're going to potentially land with three stadiums within a three-mile radius. So you've got two stadiums coming up, and the real question is A, are they going to get the permits to build a stadium? If they do, then obviously that's going to be the lead indicator that also behind the scenes the NBA has a deal in place. The baseball stadiums being developed where the Tropicana was, that's again MGM property, and they also have the rights, the betting rights with the MLB. So
you mentioned the word betting.
Yep.
And I think it's fair to say sports betting is becoming much more prolific throughout the states. As more states allow it, you get the app in many states now. I think Clayton will tell you that as we watch the Reds games on MLB Network, they always talk about the parlay.
Yeah, the same game parlay.
I mean, where's this all going to go?
Well, first off, I find it very interesting fundamentally that Vegas, while so betting friendly, is the only city that is a major sports venue at this point, I do believe, that has legalized sports betting that you can't actually bet inside of any of the stadiums. So like T-Mobile and Allegiant, they don't have sports books in them. Okay. Chicago, for example, Washington, D.C., for example, Boston, for example, they all have, you know, sports books built into their major arenas, right? It's not just football and basketball anymore, which historically has been like the heaviest wagering activity. If you look at the handle of what Vegas does, you could bet on not just same game parlays. You could literally, like, they pick like three people golfing together or four people golfing together in a group. Who's going to hit the next ball on the fairway? Who's going to hit the next ball on the green in regulation? And what I find super interesting about all of the same game parlay bullshit and all of this live betting that they're adding in, to exactly your point, John, anytime you're watching a game on TV, unless you're physically standing at that game and watching it with your own two eyes, you're on like a 1 to 3 minute delay of the live wagers. Like, just think about that for a second. They know the results, but yet they're still offering you odds, and they're giving you odds based on what they decide the odds should be for you to give your money to them to bet, to wager.
It's gone crazy.
It's way too far.
I knew it was getting crazy when I was sitting at Keeneland, and rather than going to the window to make a bet, I just get on my app, make my bet. Away we go.
Horse betting is the only type of betting still left that you can't place a live wager on. You're never going to be able to. And you're never going to be able to bet up until the time that that horse, that race posts, right? So it's unlike what I'm saying, where, like, imagine a world where Keeneland could already have run, but yet they're still offering live wagering.
Oh, yeah. I get it.
It's insane. So anyways.
All right. Well, you mentioned the PGA. And we talked about sports leagues, so I got two questions in regard to the PGA. First off, what's your thoughts on the PGA versus LIV? I mean, it's not as prevalent anymore as a topic, but it was then. And in my opinion, I think the PGA got up in arms because they finally had some competition. Right? There was no other pro tour, and then LIV comes along, so then they're slapping these guys with suspensions. They can't compete in the PGA events, et cetera. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are that at the end of the day, competition is always good.
I'm in agreement with that. Now, let's roll that down the block a little bit here. What's your take on the Scottie Scheffler incident?
I watched the video from the reverse angle that just got leaked, I think, yesterday. I didn't see that officer dragged 80 feet or 80 yards. B, I didn't see his pants ripped to an irreparable form.
Yeah, but the line is, where was the PGA in all this? I mean, companies now can do text, send out text to their entire group of employees. You're telling me the PGA to send a text out to all the players to say, hey, first of all, guys, we're delaying the start of the game or the match today, because there's been an accident involving a death right in front of the golf course. And, oh, by the way, here's what you need to do to get here safely and without incident.
Right.
How hard would that be?
It's a total organizational failure.
I mean, yes and no. You could theoretically play devil's advocate with that by saying, how hard is it for the police to coordinate, like they do with any accident, like an alternative route? Like in this case, and I saw the video firsthand, the cop was standing in the middle of the damn gate. Even in the absence of it, like, how did the police not manage an accident?
You might be right. It never gets to that point if the PGA does their job. And at the end of the day, like any good organization, what is the PGA's biggest asset? Their players. What's the one thing every company does? Protect biggest assets.
There was actually an article that came out, I guess one of the Louisville Metro Police Department detectives or officers involved in it has been slapped with some kind of punishment because he did not have his body cam on during said incident. That right there will aid in the case getting dropped if it does get dropped.
Well, again, there was a video leaked of somebody with a cell phone who witnessed it, and everything that that police officer said happened did not in fact happen. It was like the car lunged and then the officer got tapped. Like, it was completely overhyped and over. The fact he got arrested for it was ridiculous to begin with.
It was funny. He said that, well, that's the first time I've stretched in a jail cell.
Well, listen, let's flip it. He left jail, got to his tee time an hour late, and still shot a 66.
All right. Well, you're talking about what happened versus what said was happened. I got one more question before we hit the lightning round and wrap this thing up. Pro refs and umps, accuracy and calls. Has it always been this way? Or do you think with the advent of technology and then something like a basketball with the strike zone box, do you think it's that we just get to see more now because of the technology? Therefore, it's highlighting a problem that's always been there.
Funny you should bring up MLB umps. So I did not know this, and I was this last weekend old when I figured this out. They do all of the training for umpires for the MLB and the minors here at Las Vegas Ballpark, which is where the AAA affiliate for the A's plays. I did actually bring this subject up with the guy. He's a kid, actually. He's like 22 years old, trying to get breaking being a career umpire. The challenges for these fringe marginal strikes and balls, they take 10 seconds and they replay them on the big board, just like they do on TV. It's the same technology that you see on TV. It shows it. And the umpires on the field have nothing to do with it. It's called into a central place. And what happens is there's a red light and there's a green light. If the green light appears after 10 seconds, then the call is reversed. If the red light appears, then the call stands. And it's such a fluid process that already exists. Why don't they just roll it out to the majors? Like,
yeah, they got to test it.
It's been there for 5 years. How much longer do they need to test it?
Well, back to the original question. Let's take all sports in general. Do you think that these marginal calls or some of these crazy calls like Angel Hernandez make, do you think that's been going on forever and the technology is just highlighting that problem now, whereas 20 years ago we weren't able to see it as fans on TV with all the technology? Do you think it's been like going on that long?
I mean, you have two elements. You have people like Angel Hernandez, who's just not very good at what he does. And then you have the umpires or referees that, let's say, I'm not going to say umpires because I don't know what happens in Major League Baseball, but in NFL games in more recent years, there's been some calls that turn games that just leave you scratching your head like, what just happened there? And you know, in the NBA, they'll referee a game a certain way just to favor a team. Hell, the NBA is just this side of professional wrestling when it comes to legitimacy.
Yeah, but let's also address in the same breath, you almost got to be careful what you ask for, right? Like my example of strikes and balls, that's binary, right? Based on how tall a player is and based on their strike zone physically, because it changes player to player, it's binary. It's a ball or a strike. And some of these calls, though, they've over-technologicalized, or whatever the word would be. They've over-digitalized it. And how many times are you watching a basketball game, and whether it's pro at this point, but how many times are you watching a pro game and the review takes 10 minutes?
Well, it interrupts the flow of the gameplay.
Correct. Not dissimilar than a player losing his shit on an umpire and getting tossed out of a game because the ump made the bad call, right? So baseball has the problem solved. They just will not rule it out for one reason or another to the majors. Football and basketball need to get their crap together and figure out how to expedite these reviews at the end of the day.
Football's getting worse as they implement more subjective calls. Yep. And try
like targeting, right?
Oh, targeting. The lengths they go to protect the quarterback right now, it's just the side of flag football.
Yeah. The Patrick Mahomes rule. Like anytime he gets touched, it's roughing. Meanwhile, Tua's taking 3-4 concussions a year.
Yeah.
All right, fellas. Let's do a lightning round. What do you think? So I got two questions. Well, what we're going to do is I'm going to ask the question. You guys, we each give an answer to the question, one word, one sentence answer. When I'm done with my two, I want you two each to pick a question. We'll do a round robin, and we'll wrap this thing up. So number one, sports in the last few days to a week. What's the craziest, come on, man, play that you've seen?
It was Manny at bat with two strikes when he swung at the pitch, did not touch the ball with his bat. It deflected off of the catcher's glove, rolled into the dugout, which meant the runner should have scored, but the umpire called it a foul ball.
That I didn't see it, but I'm gonna look up that clip. That sounds crazy.
All right. You want to go, Berman?
Baseball, Yankees, runners on, I think it was 3 days ago, runners on first and third. Dude scorches a ball down the first. I don't even remember who was batting. Dude scorches a ball down the first baseline in Yankee Stadium. And a young fan, maybe 15 years or so of age, reaches over the fence. Yankees were down by two. Reaches over and just grabs the ball, which forces a ground rule double. They end up striking out to win the inning and win the game. So the Yankees lost because a young fan grabbed the ball. I was like, use your head, dude.
Mine, I don't know if it was from the last week. I know I saw it the last couple of days. Ronald Acuna Jr., the Braves, playing in the outfield. Fly ball hit to him. He's not running after it. He's not diving for it. He's pretty much camped under it. And because he didn't use two hands, it hits right in the glove, pops out, lands on the ground. Simple fly ball. Every coach in high school in Knothole was probably having a heart attack saying, two hands, dude. Come on, man.
I mean, I saw that one, and he got roasted pretty hard for that one.
He should have.
Well, at least he didn't take it off the head.
Let's be clear. They're still pretty damn good, though.
All right, number two. Reds against Dodgers. Over or under 1.5 wins for the Reds after they got smoked in that four-game set last week.
Until they prove to me that they can score some runs and get some hits in critical situations and protect the plate with two strikes, I'm under. Pitching's there.
Hold on. Well, let me give you a little well, their three starting pitchers for this series in this order are Ashcraft, Green, and Abbott. Does that change your answer?
Yes, it changes mine. I'm going over, and I'm going to tell you why. Because in the four-game series that the Reds played the Dodgers on the road, I think the score differential was Dodgers plus four across four games. And that included, I think, a game where the Reds got blanked like 4-5-0, right? One of those games?
Yeah, they only had like three hits or something stupid.
Yeah, but if you look at like total runs scored and even where the Reds bats are, like that's ridiculous. Like the Reds are actually manufacturing some offense against the Dodgers. Furthermore, the Dodgers are not a very tested road team, and Cincy's going to be packed.
I'm with Berman on that one, especially if those starting pitchers, if those three can give at least six innings apiece, I think they're in good shape to grab two of three.
John, you go.
Aircraft travel. Are you an aisle or a window guy?
Oh, my God. I was just on a flight yesterday, and I was in the window, and I felt, like, so claustrophobic because I don't think I've sat in a window seat for so long. I'm an aisle guy. I want to be able to get up and use the restroom, and frankly, when the plane lands, I like to be the first one up in the aisle. Just I don't know. I'm an aisle guy all the way.
You do have a bladder of a 80-year-old lady.
I do. I do.
I'm with him. I'm an aisle guy. I like having my choice of free will without interrupting other people's space to get up and do what I want.
Well, we know John's an aisle guy because of that Southwest Companion Pass.
You know what he's not? He's not a bulkhead guy.
Yeah.
He's a window guy.
I love it, John.
People bother me. Just leave me alone. I don't want to talk.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to go back to the WNBA with this one.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so Caitlin Clark gets drafted onto this Fever team. Should, and I saw this floated this week in a board, and I thought it was interesting. Should they change the lottery with the WNBA if they are going for optics and for viewing and give each team two picks, not one pick?
So you're talking about if you get the first pick, you get the first two picks. You get one and two, essentially.
Yeah, and if you're second, you get three and four, and if you're third, you get four and five.
I think that would create a different disparity, so I'm going to say no.
I'm going to go with no just because I don't know the mechanics of that being fair. It'd be different if say, how many teams are in the lottery?
15.
Yeah, so, I mean, you got 28 players gone before the 15th team picks. And they're in the lottery because, I mean, no.
I don't know that you could justify it any way you slice it. If it's me, you're going to have so many teams up in arms.
I saw it floated on a board this last week, and I thought it was an interesting concept to balance the talent out a bit because there's a reason why these guys get the lottery pick. It's because their records reflect it.
I agree that there might be a different avenue than the current one to help balance out the talent, but I don't think that specifically is the answer.
Any final thoughts before we close this out? I don't have any.
What happens when Cincy sweeps these guys, John? What's our side bet on a sweep?
Maybe I have to wear a shirt like yours.
you gotta take your shirt off.
Yeah.
If Cincinnati sweeps this weekend, John Stone will be doing the next podcast with no shirt on.
Nah, I wear a beater, but I'm not going no shirt at all.
A beater? I'll take a beater.
Yeah, you probably want to stick with the beater, dude.
I'll take a beater, man. All right,
next podcast.
And you?
Will that be the one in Chicago? So you're going to be
God, yes,
you're
going to
be at Matt's place in a wife beater?
You tell Matt that you lost a bet to Kevin and you got to do this in a wife beater. That's the way it's going to be. That's a win-win.
May the odds ever be in your favor.
a wife beater in Chicago, John.
I said a beater. I didn't say anything about a wife beater.
Well, that's what they're called, aren't they? Am I off on that? Like they're called?
No, you're correct. You can call it a wife beater. You can call it a beater.
Now you're making me sound like an NFL player.
Jesus. On that note, good talking, guys.
Yeah. All right, boys. Thanks for your time today. That was a good one, fellas.
See you later, Clayton and Ray Rice. Bye, guys.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, that is all for today. Thank you for tuning in. It was nice to do a general sports rundown instead of talking strictly about the MLB. We had a lot of good conversations. We got to learn some stuff from Berman himself, especially in regards to sports betting and how it has evolved over the last 5 to 10 years and continues to evolve. You should definitely tune in next week, though, because we are going to have the Red Zone Andrew Abbott on to talk about fantasy football, as he is an avid fantasy football person himself, in addition to my dad and I. It is way too early to have some of these thoughts, but you know what? We're going to talk about it because that's just the way the world works now. If it ain't in season, we're just giving our too early thoughts on what's coming in the season. So, whatever, whatever. How about that, Redlegs fans? We'll see you next week.